All right, so last week we started our What's Worldly series. And we asked the question, where does worldliness come from? And the answer is...
the world.
No.
Myself.
Us.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that the world is worldly is because it's made up of people who are sinners, and that includes you and me. That we're not this blank slate that is, you know, totally fine, and then the world, the big bad world, comes and infuses all these bad things into our lives, and all of a sudden we're worldly. No, it's that I'm worldly, I have sinful desires, I think worldly, I try to live apart from God, and I live in a world where everyone else is doing the same thing. And that's what it means when it says that we're following the course of this world in Ephesians chapter 2, and that we are by nature children of wrath, just like the rest of mankind. So we're all in the same boat. Today, we're going to talk about a worldly heart in a worldly world. A lot of worlds, okay? We've talked about where it starts. It starts in our own hearts, that we are naturally sinful people. That's why Jesus had to come and die for us. But what happens when you take a worldly heart and you put that worldly heart in a world full of other worldly people? There is an influence on the world. The Bible talks about that all over the place. When we talk about it starting in the heart, it doesn't mean that the external world has no influence on us. It has a major influence, and we're going to talk about what that looks like today. And we also want to talk about accurately understanding the world out there. I think sometimes when we talk about the sinfulness of our own hearts, which is absolutely true, that we are depraved, that we are without God, that we're following our own desires and our own lusts. Sometimes when we talk about us as Christians in our church and then the world out there, we can paint this unrealistic picture of what the world is, almost like it's full of monsters and everybody is going around committing the most horrible, depraved sins you can imagine. And the moment you step out into that world, you're gonna be eaten up, right? It's gonna be evil everywhere. Now again, is there evil everywhere? Absolutely. Sometimes I feel like how we present the world out there is kind of like the song "Mother Knows Best" from Tangled. Right? Ever heard that song before? If you're at camp, you heard that song on the way home. Well, how's it go, right? Mother knows best, listen to your mother. It's a scary world out there. I'm not going to sing it. Mother knows best, one way or another. Something will go wrong, I swear. Ruffians, thugs, poison ivy, quicksand, cannibals and snakes, the plague. Also, large bugs, men with pointy teeth, and stop no more, you'll just upset me, right? So she's scaring her into staying into the tower, right? You got to stay in this little tower because the moment you get outside, you're going to be eaten up. Right? There's monsters, there's cannibals, there's the plague. She's intimidating her into staying where she is. And I think sometimes we can present the church and the world that same way. Here's our safe tower, and everything outside is this scary, nasty place. And the moment you step out, man, it's just going to be chaos. It's going to be horrible. What's wrong with that? Well, sometimes a teen will grow up in church, hear that, and step out into the world for the first time and realize there's no men with pointy teeth. Actually, I just met an unsaved person who's really nice. In fact, I met an unsaved person who's nicer than a Christian or two that I know in church. Actually, I've met some unsaved people. I've met the world who are doing good things. That are doing good deeds, treating other people with respect, loving others. Where are the men with pointy teeth? Where's the cannibals, the plague, the ruffians, thugs, poison ivy, and quicksand? We teach that often the outside world is full of, you know, reprobate evil monsters. And the moment you graduate from homeschool or a Christian school or step out onto a college campus, you'll automatically be attacked from all sides, persecuted, mocked, and ostracized. Now, is that the experience of some? Yes. Are there evil people in the world? Yes. Is the world totally depraved and without God? Yes. But sometimes a young person will step into the world and realize, oh, some of these people are actually kind of nice. Where are these evil, godless monsters? They're not out to get me. They're actually kind of polite. Some of them are actually kind of moral. What was I so scared about? In fact, They may even discover that their new unsaved friends are nicer than some of their saved friends. And then suddenly there's seemingly no necessity to cling on to the Christian faith because, well, I mean, I don't see as big of a difference as I originally thought there was. So why am I clinging on to this faith when these other people seem to be living their lives happily and in some cases morally without that faith? So what's the difference here? And I think part of the problem is we set up this exaggerated view of what the world is instead of a biblical one. So before we jump into our small groups and talk about how exactly does the world influence our worldly hearts, I want us to have that accurate understanding of the world. A couple passages I want us to look at. First of all, 2 Timothy chapter 3. And this is the part that is, we talked about, that the world is without God, and there's a lot of sin in it. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1 says, "But know this, hard times will come in the last days, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, proud, demeaning, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, without love for what is good, traitors, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to the form of godliness but denying its power. Avoid these people." And here you kind of see both. You see people living for themselves. You see people living for their own desires, fighting others. But at the very end of that list, it says they have this form, some of them have this form of godliness. So they're looking good, they're acting good, but what's the problem there? They're denying its power. They're denying the source. They're denying God. See, here's the thing. We talked about worldliness at its core being a way of thinking that pursues your own desires by ignoring God. Do you remember that? Now, some people, how does that look? That looks like pursuing every sinful activity, every sinful idea that they can think of. That's what it looks like to live without God for those people. Then there's some other people, you know how they live without God? They try to be as moral as possible. They try to live as good of a life as possible. But they're still living apart from God. They are still living with a form of godliness, but denying the source of that godliness. Another list that talks about the worldliness of the world is 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9. "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit God's kingdom? Do not be deceived, nor the sexual immoral, or adulterers, adulterers, homosexuals, no thieves, greedy people, drunkards, verbally abusive people, or swindlers will inherit God's kingdom." The world is totally depraved, and what we mean by that is they are incapable of pleasing God. Just as with us without Christ, we are incapable of pleasing God. They're without God, which means they are capable of the worst sins possible. Every sinner, us included, are capable of the worst sins possible. Are all of them committing the worst sins possible? No, they're not. But without God, what's holding us back from committing the worst sins possible? Nothing, really. Only our own self-preservation sometimes, our own sense of morality, the fact that we are made in the image of God. But everyone is incapable of pleasing God. There's no moral lawgiver to hold back from being as bad as possible. At its core, depravity is simply trying to live life without God. And sometimes that appears like, you know, some evil dictator somewhere. And sometimes living without God looks like a really nice, kind person who tries to do good deeds for others. The core of the problem, when we talk about worldliness, the core of the problem is not everyone doing a lot of bad stuff. The core of the problem is everyone trying to live life apart from their Creator who made them. And that looks differently in each person. John 14, 17 says that the world doesn't see or know God. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 through 18 says that the world's understanding is darkened and their hearts are hard. And this does lead to evil living, it says. because there's nothing holding them back. That's their biggest problem, that they are without God. And so we want to have an accurate picture of what the world is. That when you go out into the world, whether that's at college or a job, you're going to meet a lot of really kind, nice, moral, unsaved people. But that doesn't mean that every heart in the world isn't without God. Because God knows the heart of every person. And that should help us look inwardly again. Because sometimes we think, well, I'm not doing all these bad things. Are we still worldly sometimes? Can you be worldly at heart and still be doing a lot of good things externally? Yeah, you can do it. So can the unsaved person down the street. We're all worldly at heart. We all need Jesus Christ. So, when we consider the influence of the world on our worldly hearts, what is included in that influence? I want to look at, and this is what we're going to be discussing about in our small groups, three ways that the world influences our worldly hearts. Number one, the world offers opportunity to fulfill your desires. Turn really quickly to Mark chapter 4. All right, Mark 4, it's a famous parable in Mark 4 about the sower and the seeds, right? You remember that story where he throws some on hard ground, some along the path, some along rocky ground, some along thorny ground, and some along good ground. In starting in verse 13, Jesus explains the meaning of this parable, but I want us to look specifically on verse 19. Or verse 18. Others are like seeds thrown among the thorns. These are the ones who hear the word, but the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. So in this passage, we see one way that the world influences our hearts, that it provides opportunity. That we see the picture of someone receiving the word, hearing the gospel, but what happens? These thorns are around them. And these thorns spring up, and they present them with the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires of other things. These other things are springing up, saying, hey, over here, hey, look, there's also this other thing that you can follow, there's this other thing that you can believe. And those thorns end up choking the word. See, the gospel of Jesus is never unopposed. There are things all around us that can choke out the word. And these thorns are things that already appeal to our worldly hearts. The world provides opportunity to fulfill our desires. And in our small groups, we'll discuss what does it mean with the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, the desires for other things. What could be some of those thorns, those opportunities that could influence our hearts? The second thing that the world does is it offers approval to fulfill your desires. And I think if I were to pick one that is the most deadly, the most effective, it'd be this one. Who likes having approval? Raise your hand. Okay, my hand's raised too, okay? We like to be approved. We like to be received. We like to be accepted among other people. At the end of Romans chapter 1, where after he just finished talking about another list of horrible sins that those without God are guilty of and capable of, it ends the chapter by saying this: although they know God's just sentence, that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but even applaud others who practice them. That the world offers acceptance, approval to those who seek to live life by their own desires. Is that kind of obvious in our world today? That the message of the world is pursue what you want. And if you do that, guess what? This whole wide world will embrace you with open arms. You will be family. We will accept you. We will welcome you. And that is an incredibly appealing message. The world offers a warm, welcoming embrace to those who adopt the priorities and worldview of the world. In John 15, verse 19, Jesus said to his disciples, If you were of the world, do you know what would happen? The world would love you as its own. Sounds nice, doesn't it? We like being welcomed. We like being accepted. We like being embraced. And the world offers that. It's so tempting. The message of the world is this: you can pursue whatever you want, your deepest desires, and we will accept you and embrace you for it. We will stand up and applaud your bravery and your boldness. And they offer that message to you. And they say, we offer that approval. And it's a tempting message. And then thirdly, the world offers creativity to fulfill your desires. You know, after the flood, God told Moses, or Noah, that the intentions of man's heart is only evil from its youth. Sinners sin. And the problem with sinners sinning is sinners are very creative. They find new ways to sin. When they get bored of one way to sin, they come up with some new way to sin. And because we have worldly hearts that want to pursue our desires, we profit off of that. The sinful creativity of the world around us. When we can become bored with our own sin, we look around and say, what has the world produced? What has the world presented up and offered that will help me fulfill my desires? There's a story in the book of Deuteronomy when Moses is preaching to the children of Israel before they enter the land. He offers them a warning. He says this: be careful when you enter the land. Be careful not to be ensnared by their ways. That's the people of the land, the pagan nations, after they had been destroyed before you. Don't inquire about their gods, saying, how did these nations worship their gods? I'll also do the same. You must not do the same to the Lord your God, because they practice every detestable act, which the Lord hates. You see what's going on there? He's saying, when you go into the land, what's going to be your temptation? You're going to look at what the pagan nations are doing, and you're like, maybe I can get some ideas from them. Maybe I can figure out some new ways, in their case, to worship the Lord. And he says, don't get your ideas from the world. And in the same way, although my heart is sinful already, the world holds up new temptations and said, hey, have you tried this new way? Have you tried the latest and greatest? And it presents the ideas, us with ideas that might not have ever entered into our own mind on our own. Our own sinful hearts profit from the sinful, creative hearts of others. In our sin, we get bored easily. We're always looking for something new. We're always looking for something more exciting. And this is one influence that the world has. So, as we just introduced this, a couple things. An accurate picture of the world. That when we talk about worldliness, it's ultimately godlessness. It's not everybody is doing the worst possible things imaginable. That when you enter the world, there's going to be a mixture of really externally wicked, evil people, and then a bunch of really externally moral, nice people. The core problem is the godlessness, that they're denying the Creator who made them. And the influence, when we consider the world on our own hearts, opportunity, approval, and creativity. And so I'm going to pass out these handouts. We're all going to kind of have this to look off together. Grab one of those, and then we're going to spend the next 30 minutes in our groups discussing some of these things and asking these questions.